Do Radio is a proud sponsor of the Real Cool Film Series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Dingo, is showing Tuesday, July 18th at 7 p.m. Miles Davis made his only acting appearance in this film about a jazz trumpeter who dares to realize his musical dreams in the Australian outback. The film also has an award-winning Miles Davis soundtrack.
Did you like the music?
Again, that's Dingo, showing Tuesday, July 18th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Gotta go now, John, before they take off and leave me. Nice meeting you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Report from Kabul speech by Zahair Wahab on Wednesday, July 26th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House in Portland. Zahair Wahab, a native of Afghanistan and director of graduate studies at the American University of Afghanistan, will present a critical analysis of the Afghani political, military, economic, and cultural situation. Again, that's Report from Kabul by Zahair Wahab on Wednesday, July 26th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House, 4312 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. Today is Monday, July 17th, and this is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott, and you are an important element and participant in our program this morning. This month, many of you may have recognized that when you open up your paycheck, those who were earning minimum wage received a raise. For those in the Portland area, it was the biggest minimum raise hike in two decades, up $1.50 to $11.25. In other parts of the state, the raise also received raise, but in different amount outside of the Portland metro area. So, for example, in Hood River, Deschutes, or Lane counties, the minimum wage went from $9.75 to $10.25, and in other parts of the state, it went from $9.50 to $10. The difference was part of a compromise by those who were struggling to raise the minimum wage in terms of recognizing in different parts of the states the economy is different. So in spite of those differences, those workers throughout the states received a raise in the minimum wage. However, an important question for all of us, not only those who are minimum wage employees, but whether or not our wages can keep up with the cost of living in this state. And that will be a part of our largest discussion that I seek to have with you this morning, to hear your stories about how are you managing in this economy. This was prompted by a couple of articles that was columns that were in the Oregonian recently that focus on an employee at Kenny and Zook as he talked about his struggles to manage living on juggling two jobs. And so it was authored by the columnists in the Oregonian, and please help me with pronouncing his name, Steve Dean, D-U-I-N, who is a columnist in the Oregonian. He wrote two articles recently about a young man who shared in the first column his story and the challenges he had working on two jobs and facing the possibility of homelessness at the end of the month. This column was followed up a couple of days later by an announcement that one of his employees fired him following the first column that came out. So the young man, Bryce Claggett, 26, is still struggling, trying to figure out how he will pay his rent now that he no longer have two jobs, and with the possibility that he might be out of his housing at the end of this month. So the question for you, and I'd like for you to call in and share your stories. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Share your stories about wage and how you managed to survive the struggles you have, and whether the so-called booming economy is actually booming for you. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And in the meantime, I perhaps should let you know about an event coming up on July 27, but sponsored by the Job with Justice Working Rights Board, is a workers' rights board hearing at St. Charles Church, 5310 Northeast 42nd Avenue, 62830. And in that hearing, we'll focus on wage theft in particular of some workers in industry. I'll share some more information with that later with you. But perhaps I'll begin, as I wait your call, with the first column, and I'll read it now. Okay, this was published on July 7th, and it begins, "Business was insane at Kenny and Zook's Monday," Bryce Claggett says, "and for 10 and a half hours, he was lost in the front house, cutting pastrami, assembling Rubens, schlepping desserts. When he clocked out at 9:03 p.m., Claggett was, like the bagel bin, running on empty and still faced the bus slog to St. John's. On the long 20-minute break, on his lone 20-minute break, he runs to the bank to send his landlord an electronic check for $672.50. His share of the August rent, his final month's rent. "I have 28 days left before I am homeless," Claggett says. He's 26. "We met a few days earlier at the deli takeout counter. I asked a question or two, and Claggett really shuts up. As his father Michael says, there are no strangers to Bryce. We talked on local comedy clubs, then moved on to rental application fees and his bruising fall towards the poverty line. His head's still above water," Claggett says, "so he doesn't qualify for a life preserver. I hate to think how many millennials in town know the feeling." Claggett works two jobs, 40-odd hours each week at the deli and another dozen as a bud tender at Cured Green, a cannabis dispensary behind Mock Creek Grocery on North Lombard. "Ask what's the marijuana shop owners saw in him," he says. "Probably the same thing Kenny and Zooks saw in me. Trustworthiness and a willingness to supply effort no matter what." He grew up in West Virginia. His parents divorced when he was 10. With his dad's help and a state scholarship, he made it through college without a debt or credit card, focused on film and electronic media. But he ended up making pizza for barely more than minimum wage and catching weekend buses for open mics in Boston and New York. It's hard to accumulate wealth in West Virginia, Claggett says. His grandmother died 3 years ago, leaving him $5,000, so he struck out for the Northwest. He arrived on Independence Day, dropped in a U-Haul at the Econo Lodge in Vancouver, Washington, bought some weed from a homeless guide, and figured as fireworks lit up the night sky that the new start would be an easier one. Little came easy, of course. Guinea and Zook hired him in June 2015, but after 2 years and three raises, he makes just $12 an hour. A little bit less, Clackett offers, than the guy making cookies at Subway. The housing situation is worse. He's sleeping on a couch in a battered bungalow near Pier Park in St. John, but his roommate has health issues and the lease expires at the end of July. He's hard-pressed to cough up $50 application fees and still has no credit history. So you can imagine the search for an apartment. Believing himself no stranger to Portland City Council, Claggett reached out for help to both Mayor Ted Wheeler and Commissioner Chloe Udaly, a vaunted advocate for renters, but says he drew no response. The storied website noappfee.com that previews areas listing for a single and refundable $35 application fee. Well, on Monday it shows a single Portland apartment under $995, one at Aldert Village just off Southeast 160th. But I would get two bedrooms, one bath, and granite countertops, Claggett says. His last two-week paycheck from Kenny and Zooks was, after taxes, $678.05, or just enough to cover that final rent payment. He has no health insurance. I had to decide if Kaiser Permanente needed my money or Sprint. He's embarrassed and, yes, discouraged. I have no idea what's going to happen, he says. That scares me the most, the uncertainty. Am I going to put all my stuff in a storage unit? Am I supposed to pick up a third job? His father, 3,000 miles away, worried about the weed and roots for a career. I never heard anyone complain about his work ethics, Michael Claggett says. When he gets a job, he sticks with it, even when it no longer pays the rent. I'm a bankruptcy attorney, the father says. I see this every day. This generation bouncing from one job to another. It's not unusual to see families that worked all their lives in the coal mines or the factories, and the kids are doing nothing. It's a typical West Virginia problem. Each generation is doing worse than the one before. That's why Bryce Clackett left Appalachia, or thought he had. On Tuesday, his third anniversary here, he logged in 5.5 hours at Kenny and Zook's, worked without holiday pay. He pulled in $4.50 in tips at the takeout counter. Afterwards, he bummed a few cigarettes and took the yellow line to Lombard. It's being the 4th of July. He bought a 6-pack of Sessions IPA at the Shell station for company on the bus ride home. It was hard to go to sleep, he admits. In another 3 weeks or so, it may be quite a bit harder. That was the article that was featured in the Oregonian a couple of weeks ago, which was followed up, we'll share shortly, with another article. But in it, I think it reflects the struggle many people have, not solely millennials, in terms of being able to afford to live.
You know, the thing that's really sad about this whole idea of of wage stagnation is the fact that, as your article indicated, we're looking at something like maybe two decades worth of wage slowdowns. And by slowdowns, I mean not keeping up with the cost of living. But yet there are still states, as we speak, that are pushing to reverse gains made by various municipalities passing wage increase laws. So you have states fighting back against cities as though they're not paying attention to any of the federal indicators coming out, as though they're not paying attention to financial news, as though they're not paying attention to their constituents' cries. And I know in one of my home states, Missouri, which is a right-to-work state, they had pushed forward a measure that would increase the minimum wage. Well, within hours left of a recent legislative session, the Missouri Senate melted down Friday as Republicans muscled through this measure that would nullify the recent wage increase. So you've got opposing forces acting on our ability to afford ourselves. And by opposing forces, I mean not only are there forces pushing to lift the minimum wage, and some people not sure how that would benefit them, but you have legislatures pushing back to reduce any increases or gains. You have businesses pushing back. And then sometimes you even have workers pushing back, as in the case of the restaurant and hospitality field, where people are concerned that raising the minimum wage in the house totally for a restaurant, say a local restaurant, say I own a restaurant and I have front wait staff, and my wait staff gets tips, and my bar staff might get tips, and they split them proportionally with everybody in the house. But if I raise my salary so that everybody makes, say, $16 an hour, then take away tipping because I've had to increase my prices, some of my wait staff feel that they're being cheated. And so they're not happy with it. So there's a lot of, I think, deliberate confusion and polarization of the working people in this country with regard to how to afford themselves, how to press forward to get more money, or how to press forward to keep from losing what little you have.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. We're talking about wages and how people are managing to survive or not survive so well. We'd like to hear your stories of your working condition and the challenges you face. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And that's not, you're sharing the challenges not only in this state, but in other states.
In other states as well.
As well. Mm-hmm. And that's not only, not even reflecting the struggle people have in terms of job and scheduling of jobs. And, you know, so many people work and that, you know, you don't know what your work schedule is like next week. Your hours shifts back and forth. Mm-hmm. And you just have to do it.
Well, what is just have to do it?
Well,
be at two places at one time.
Manage to work long hours with little sleep and not sure of your schedule and the havoc that plays on family life.
So well, not just the havoc it plays on family life. Okay, let's just expand this a little bit more. Having worked bizarre hours when I was younger, sometimes by choice, I know that not everybody's constitution is built for working late hours or early hours. And depending on what kind of job you have, if your body cannot handle that that particular job's scheduling and rhythm, you may not be at your peak, okay? So you got people trying to juggle two jobs and get from one place to another, and perhaps they're blessed enough to have transportation like a motorbike or a vehicle, and they're trying to get from job A to job B, and they're running on fumes because they haven't had enough sleep. How efficient do you think they do anything from their job duties to drive?
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of danger that comes from trying to do those kinds of juggling. And then our overall mortality rates start taking a dive as well because we're not living a healthy life.
Exactly. I mentioned earlier in terms of how these issues are important, and the Workers' Rights Board that will take place on Thursday, July 27th at 6 p.m. at St. Charles Church, specifically focusing on the wage theft and exploitation in the midst of Portland's construction boom. Over the past 5 years, Boley has received 148 prevailing wage complaints and claims worth $1.12 million in Multnomah County alone. But workers are fighting back. They are organizing, and this testimony hearing will take place on July 27th. The Workers' Rights Board will hear testimony from local construction workers about why they organize, current treatment and exploitation of contractors, wage theft, etc. So for more information, contact the Workers' Rights Board or Portland Jobs with Justice for that event on July 27th.
Is there any word, I know this is a little bit off topic, but is there any word of who some of these construction companies or contractors are that have been accused of wage theft?
I don't have that information.
Okay, just curious. Maybe I can find something while we're there. One of the reasons being that I think it's really helpful that direct pressure be brought to bear, and that might mean contacting, you know, Secretary of State or whatever you do to make sure that they know that that ordinary people are aware and not happy with it. Sometimes you need the extra weight of other people behind you to get your stories brought front and center.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey, and we're waiting on you. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And, you know, I know it's Monday. I know it's summer. We've got sun in effect now. And about this time of the year in Oregon, it's almost a daily phenomena, so people are trying to take advantage of it. But if you've got just a few minutes, share your thoughts, help us build community, an awareness of what's going on. And if you are trying to scurry between two or three jobs, if you are fortunate enough to have one of those low-cost cell phone plans, and I'm all for them, you know, take advantage of it and call us while you're waiting on the bus, you know.
All right. So the story I mentioned earlier, I read the column about Bryce Hackett, who just shared some of his story of trying to live and work in and survive well enough to make it to each day. And apparently it got a lot of notice. And there was a subsequent article column by Steve Dean a few days later. Mm-hmm. I'll read in part, Ken Gordon lost his cool. And just like that, Bryce Claggett lost his job at Kenny and Zook's Delicatessen, Gordon's Southwest Portland restaurant. We'll see a little bit more in a second about what happened to Mr. Claggett and how and why he lost his job and what is he doing as the end of the month approaches. But let's go to a caller online. Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, I just wanted to make a comment about the fact that, you know, I'm glad that somebody's bringing up organizing in our society. it's been a very long time since unions have been, you know, part of the focus of workers' rights. And in a lot of ways, the degradation of the workplace is happening because unions are getting ousted from, you know, our positions that we used to have. So I just wanted to say thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, could you, do you work, it sounds like you work in unions or familiar with unions?
I am. I am an apprentice right now. I've been in a union for 2.5 years.
Oh, excellent.
How old are you?
I'm 32.
Okay. Now, you're at that prime age where, I'm just going to call it what it is, propaganda is trying to turn young people away from unions. Even though you're in the trades, what is it about a union that you find that's really important that you wish people your age would know?
Well, absolutely. The work conditions is primarily what it is. The fact that if things are unsafe, I can say something and work stops. Mm-hmm. You know, we have each other's back in that sense that if something's wrong, we fix it, and we don't work until it's fixed. And that's one thing that I love about the union I'm in, and it's amazing. You know, I worked in other jobs before where you just had to keep your mouth quiet and keep working, even though the conditions were unsafe or unsuitable for someone to be in. But in a union, you have the, like you were saying, all the people behind you that bring things to the front.
And have you always worked in the trades?
No. I spent 7 years in the military, and then I worked odd jobs in kitchens and things like that. So I know what it's like to not be in a union, and after I've been in one, I'll never go back.
All right.
Well, thanks for the words about the need for a union. And even with some of the other jobs you were at, was there a lot of, I guess I'll just say, antagonism or just indifference toward unions? Or is it a matter of people just really haven't heard the truth, so that they think that people who work in unions get a higher wage or being coddled?
Yeah, that's what it is entirely. I feel that a lot of people envy what the unions bring to the table and give their people, and so there's a lot of resentment. Like, why should that guy get paid more than me because he does the same work? Well, in the end, it's because we go through a lot more training and a lot more professionalism is brought to the table as far as unions go. And yeah, there's a lot of resentment towards the unions. You know, we're called thugs. We have a lot of, you know, weight behind us when it comes to work, and so a lot of people feel that that's counterproductive. But in the end, you know, these companies are pushing propaganda to get workers to do more with less, to work harder for less pay, to stay after work time. You know, I get paid overtime if I work 10 minutes past my time.
Yes,
and that's how it should be. My time is valuable to me. And it's not to those companies.
Hey, thank you so much, and thank you for and your thoughts that you shared with us this morning.
Yes.
No, thank you.
And keep spreading the word.
To the forefront.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
You know, I appreciate the caller and what he had to say about unions. And there's a lot of myths around unions. And one thing that we do know at that when unions were at their height, workers' benefits and way of living was much better than the decline that began in the late 60s and early 70s. Public sector's union in 2012 fell from 37 to 35.9% of all workers, while in the private sectors, you know how many people are unionized?
6%. Yes, very few. And, you know, when you think about the fact that you've got Microsoft laying off so many people in our area, in the metro area, it's all the more important to look at unionizing as a way of pushing back. We welcome your calls at 503-231-8187, and we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Mitch. You're on the air.
Yeah, I appreciate your discussion here. It's so rare to hear anything on the air that would even reference the term propaganda in the discussion about wage stagnation over the last 45 years. And my question to you, after thanking you and appreciating this, is why it is you think that organized labor first, but then workers second, haven't even formulated a demand upon public broadcasting, which has three different daily and weekly shows from the perspective of business, namely This Week on Wall Street, Planet Money, the third one is Marketplace, constant indoctrination about looking from the perspective of investors who let their money work for them, and that public broadcasting, which taxpayers pay for, has never had one program from the perspective of wage slaves. And we don't even see a demand from organized labor. I write letters to the editor all the time about this subject and other subjects, and I never see in those letter section anyone saying, oh, I'm with the Pacific Green Party, I'm with the Democratic Party, I agree OPB should have at least one program from the perspective of a wage slave produced locally. And we wonder about why there is this propaganda and why people keep voting against their interests.
You raised several questions, and, and one thing I would like to take on is first the one about public broadcasting. And my question would be, how public is public broadcasting, and look at their finances? So I'm not surprised that those who underwrite many of those programs, which are these large corporations, that their interests are taken up.
But where did labor go?
Well, here's a challenge. Reverse the process. Instead of going to the media management and asking why they haven't had this program, go to union leadership and ask them why they haven't assailed public broadcasting.
This is the question I posed to you. I thought
I'm telling you, you might have insight. I'm telling you what to do. That is the answer. That's the first answer. Right now,
I've gone to them, and they look at the sky, and they say, don't ask me about labor and media issues.
Okay.
And they roll their eyes.
Do you go to the communications folks then? I mean, like, I was a member of the union as an employee of the city, and I was active on my board, and the communications people are always looking at ways they can get their words out. So a good reminder helps, because you have to understand that in groups that are trying to fight back against strong negative opinion, strong negative media, and what have you, sometimes you get what's politely called groupthink, and you don't always see outside of your little circle. And so someone outside of the circle, such as yourself, who would recount the same story you just told me to the communications people on the boards of the unions, would help them recognize, aha, here's something we could do. And it's just a matter of building those bridges. Just because a person is well-versed in getting the word out about their union's activities and the fact that they were able to get a better contract or maintain a contract and not suffer such large losses, doesn't mean that they're always remembering that, oh, I can take this word outside of this circle and push harder. And if unions start pushing the public broadcasters to carry the shows, well, they as a rule have union employees who work for them, you know. I'm just saying, give that a shot. It's changing the flow and connecting with them.
Celeste,
you,
if you were a member of a union, you know how frequently there are letter-writing campaigns organized, either on behalf of raising the minimum wage so that they could show they're in solidarity in a work-at-will state like Oregon with the rest of us that are not union members. So there has been solidarity for immigrants. There has been solidarity for foreign labor issues. There has never been, to my knowledge, and I'm 58 years old now, And I've raised this issue when I was a union member for 7 years with the Newspaper Guild, and I've raised this, I've tried running op-eds in the public sections of the newspapers, but it's only my isolated letters and my conversations with union members who are, some union members who work for the union itself, like SEIU, they make two or three times what their union members who work as hotel employees make.
Mm-hmm.
And their job is to spread union consciousness. And I have never seen a letter to the editor, aside from my own, from SEIU saying, how about a letter-writing campaign to OPB, which has a monopoly on state public broadcasting?
Well, thank you for your thoughts. I want to get some other people in, but I think you have given us a few ideas, especially mm-hmm. about programming, and perhaps we could have some people from
right.
union.
And next time, go to a general meeting at one of these unions and say that in front of the membership.
And let me remind you that while many public radio stations have business programs, KBOO on Monday evenings from 6 to 6:30 broadcast labor radio. So
that's right.
That's a clue for you to look at. Thank you so much.
And connect with.
And you're listening to KBOO More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey, and we're waiting on your call at 503-231-8187. And, you know, now, not to push aside what the caller was saying, you know, sometimes you have to redirect your zeal and your energy. And I think by going to general meetings and speaking in front of rank and file members, you can electrify some of them who are looking at ways that they can contribute. I've also gone to union trainings where we talk about how to get our word out, how to make sure that the general public knows our contribution. And we've come up with projects, we've come up with media campaigns, you know, high level, low level. But the most important thing is to get the energy from the folks who are outside that circle in and talking to their circles too.
I think there's, you know, there was a time in American society in the not so recent past when unions were powerful. 30-40% of the American public and private sectors were unionized. That has gone down to 6%.
Yes.
Since 1970, union membership has declined rapidly, and for, you know, we can list the number of reasons, but the point in fact is that unions are not powerful as they once were, and the myth that we have as of the almighty union who is useless, I think regardless of one's frustration with it, I think a part of the challenge is, why has there been a decline in union membership and workers' power? And I think that's something that we need to examine. And I just came across an article in the New York Times that was recently published by Kashana Cawley, Why Millennials Should Lead the Next Labor Movement.
And they should. And can you briefly share what her high points are?
Well, I can reference you the article.
I'll read it. Yeah.
Okay.
Send me the link. We're sitting over here with our technology, and we should post it. Well, you know, part of it's just been bad propaganda and unions being slow to respond. Some of it is also the internal challenges of humanity working together. And I'm trying to be nice, you know, not be nasty with this. But basically, unions are a cohesion of people, a coalescence of people coming together. So people got issues. Now, in the 70s, when women were breaking into the workforce, and that's not to say they weren't before. We all know about World War II, okay, and women in the workforce. But the point is that a lot of women were having challenges. So women in the 70s and 80s were fighting to get recognized in what had been male-dominated areas and union-dominated areas. And the expectation was that men of their own age would be their allies. However, men of their own age saw them as a threat. The support for these women came from surprising places, and one of the mainstays of support were the fathers of these women who mm-hmm. recognized what their daughters were going through, and especially those who were union families. So dads in a union, daughters in the union. So that's one of the things that was a challenge for unions, is the fact that they had to fight their own biases and blindness, you know. And of course there's the racism, you know, we've mentioned the sexism, then there's the fear of refugees and everything else that unions have had to fight. And so unions have been doing a lot of internal trainings to try to overcome their own biases so that that is not an obstacle. But the propaganda being what it is, a lot of jobs came up with the idea that it didn't take a union to protect the benefits of the work. So you didn't need a union. When I worked for Federal Express, we didn't have a union, but we had competitive wages to a union house, which was UPS. Okay, so that's what kept us getting the prevailing wage.
However, the UPS were union.
Huh? Yes.
UPS was mm-hmm. union, and so very much to be so. Competitive with them. I mm-hmm. understand.
Mm-hmm. And it helped us be really flexible in the beginning.
So what you do, it helped you
mm-hmm.
Because of the strength of the union over competing company.
Right. Now, later on in the time I was still working for them, pilots formed a union. People think of unions as being a working class institution, and it's not just a working class institution. As a matter of fact, the city of Portland has different tiers of unions, and there's a professional union there too. So, you know, people have come up with this idea that unions are no longer necessary to protect your benefits. Unions are greedy. Unions are thugs. Unions drive costs and expenses up, and so people have bought all their propaganda.
I'm laughing mm-hmm. When you said to protect your benefits. What benefits?
Well, that's the whole thing, because a lot of folks lost them, and right now unions are fighting to keep the out-of-pocket expenses and the employer's share of payments for benefits.
Remember pensions?
Yes. Pensions went away. We actually did a show on that about how a lot of corporations were raiding their workers' pensions, mm-hmm. you know, and they didn't have a union, so who was going to say anything? And then people were buying that whole idea that unions were obsolete, that they were no longer necessary. And, you know, yeah, that's right. If you want a low-wage job, it's not necessary. And if you want more for yourself, then you might want to re-examine the whole idea of banding together for collective bargaining.
Kashana Cawley, who I referenced earlier, mm-hmm. and she takes on your call. She ends her column, "People like me who have mental museums filled with memories of the stability that came from our parents' union job could be the perfect leaders of the next labor union renaissance. We millennials, many of whom entered the workforce during the last recession, have borne the brunt of the country's recent decline in employment quality, with lower wages, diminishing benefits, and the presence of non-compete clauses that hurt many entry-level employees from finding subsequent jobs. Mm-hmm. We show higher support for unions than previous generations, and with good reasons. Unionized employees typically enjoy better benefits and have made about 27% more than their non-unionized counterparts for roughly the last 15 years. The union newsletters my father kept in our bathroom magazine rack may have faded, but their message about the values of jobs that provide a fair wage, reasonable conditions, and the ability to care for a family is as timely now as it ever was."
There it is. And I imagine that the employee that was working for Kenny and Zooks was not a union member. I imagine. Yeah. I mean, maybe there's something more to it. Join us in the conversation. We know you're trying to get to work or get kids settled or maybe just have some you time with a cup of coffee or tea. But join us in conversation at 503-231-8187 here on More Talk Radio. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Jeffrey.
Good morning. So I'm just kind of curious. I belong to a union, and I drive a school bus, and I work for FS for a contract to Portland Public Schools. We just renegotiated our contract. We lost something, but we just got the highest raise we've ever gotten. I'm a senior driver, was making $17.75 an hour, all of $17.75 an hour, for the responsibilities we have. Mm-hmm. And we just got a raise to 2020. That's the top tier drivers.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The lower tier drivers make less, but there's a national driver shortage, and it shows up in school bus driving. And what really stimulated me was that my union elected representatives at the top level make a lot of money, and I'm trying to figure out proportionately, you know, because they're a business union, and unionism has gone in that direction a lot.
Mm-hmm.
With them elected representatives wanting to keep their jobs because they're making so much money, and you know, they have dues check off. And I'm a self-pay because I want to see what's going on with, you know, the union officers. I'm wondering if at some point somebody here can find out and compare what all the union elected presidents and vice presidents and secretary treasurers in the Oregon area make and compare that, because mine make a lot of money.
That's a good question, and I'm
sure you could find that information online, because just like any organizations, unions have to publish their expenses. And having been a trustee of a union, I know that that was one of our jobs. So I'm pretty sure you can find that online with some simple research.
I've researched that, and I really haven't. And our union keeps their financial statements private. And they're very picky about that.
They're supposed to let general membership see the budgetary
items. They do that.
Items.
They do that.
And their annual budget. You should be able to see budget with year-to-date expenses and be able to compare them. But here's the thing. I'm not denying that. I think that there are unions that really need to have the membership ask for some accountability out of the leadership with regard to you're getting this salary, you're spending our money this way, how are you spending it, and how do you justify this? And that will keep a union lean and on its toes when the membership is interested and active in finding out how the money is spent and how these people justify their jobs and even ask for their work plans to find out what was slated to be accomplished versus what was really accomplished.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. And we'll go to, we will not go to our next caller, because that next caller has not yet arrived.
Mm-hmm. I see the light blinking, ding, yeah. Ding. But you are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, and coming up at 9 o'clock.
It's the OMO Variety Hour, the state bill to regulate work schedule, a book mall review of The Snow Child, a reading from Rad Women Worldwide about polystyrene, plus a look...
Polystyrene, who is she? Okay, I'm bad. Okay. I'm bad.
Oh, I'm not quick enough to respond. You know? Plus a look at the state's new transportation package and the risk of privatizing public transit. At 10 on Locust Focus, the Oracle executive who resigned in protest to his company joining Trump's transitions team returns to KBOO to reflect on 6 months of Trump. At 11, it's Health Watch and Dr. Tracy Stein, Everything Guide to Integrative Pain Management. 11:30, Making Contact, goes from Cape Town, South Africa, to Los Angeles, to Oakland. Three cities grappling with eviction, displacement, and houselessness. Thanks, KBOO members, for your continued generous support. And if you are not a current member, you may become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Now.
Yes, please do. And not just supporting KBOO, but look at media as a whole. Any media facility or organization that provides you with as balanced as possible information, that's who you should be supporting. And I'm going to ask people, do you read, if you're in a union, do you read your union newspaper? You know, you can get it free delivered to your house. You can read it electronically. You know, there's probably one in your shop if you work there. And you should read it. You should respond to the information in it. And you should visit the websites to keep informed on what's going on in your particular union, and be able to share the word with some of our friends, family members, peers who are either not familiar with the benefits or openly antagonistic, and be able to show them some of the information to back up your support and the reasons why you support a union. Also, I would think that a union newspaper would be good to show your friends and family members that are Trump supporters, you know. You know, in addition to stop calling them stupid so you can win them over and build bridges, you should show them your media facilities, your media outlets, and share them with them. You know, maybe you can win them over when they see what the working class is reading.
Exactly. Yes. So we began our program this morning by noting one conversation with one worker, mm-hmm. and the challenge he faced in terms of making a living and being able to pay rent by working two different jobs. And there was a subsequent article that said he lost his job. And it goes into why his employee fired him.
His employer fired him for?
Well, reasons made clear in imposed probation, which was violated today, insubordination to manager, shouting before customers, disruptive behavior.
Okay.
That's what they...
Well, there's two sides.
They tweeted it.
Mm-hmm.
And the columnist writes... in part, you know, over the course of 5 days, Clackett and I spoke for hours about his anxiety about the imminent loss of his St. John's apartment. I have no idea what's going on to happen. That scares me the most, the uncertainty. Am I going to put all my stuff in the storage unit? Am I supposed to pick up a third job? Posted on July 7th, the column drew immediate reactions, more than 400 comments in the first 12 hours. No one was more agitated than Gordon, who co-founded the Delicatessen in 2007. Almost immediately after the column appeared, he sent me, the columnist, an email complaining I've written about his employee without at least fact-checking. And he argued that the employee takes about $1,500 a month with tips, plus his other job, and pays about $650 per month in rent. How is he not making it on that? The employee asked.
Employer
asked. Okay. And it goes on and on with, you know, he said, she said.
Mm-hmm.
But the point, in fact, is that here was one person who had no voice. And it, I think, reveals what I think you were saying in an earlier caller was suggesting, mm-hmm. as well as the columnist from the New York Times, of the need and necessity for workers to organize, to protect and secure their welfare, and a challenge, I suspect, and maybe they go hand in hand, with the union voices are so weak, it may be more difficult for employees to organize. And maybe people say, I'll just keep my head down and work whatever hours they give me, because I need to pay my rent.
Well, here's the challenge with that. This article actually was published in 2014, March 8, 2014. Hold on, let me pull this part up. Okay. So it says that 61% of those making minimum wage are millennials living in poverty. Mm-hmm. Okay. March 8, 2014, out of Thought Catalog. And to read it, it's thoughtcatalog.com. The article is by James B. Barnes. And I'm thinking that here you have a cohort of folks who are living in poverty, making minimum wage. That's the same person we're talking about in this story, who is worried about making a basic living.
Yes.
And they are perhaps the most tech-savvy adult cohort we've had.
Mm-hmm.
In all of humanity. Start organizing and connecting with your friends and your peers on social media and building up support, and if nothing else, just ways of communicating with each other, some clearinghouse where you can get information and help each other, and maybe kind of like the Craigslist of I'm trying to make it in this life,
Yes.
and start organizing that way, because for somebody to be said, well, you clear this much in tips, here's the problem with tips. If you're not the front worker, you're not exposed to getting tips, and you getting tips is at the mercy of the front workers, the wait staff, okay? If the wait staff are not getting a lot of tips, you're probably not going to get very much either. Okay, so you've got to organize, you've got to start communicating, you've got to start sharing information. Now, did we got another caller there? Okay, good.
No,
good. So let me go ahead.
Would you finish your point?
Well, that's pretty much enough. I mean, that's okay. Something to start with right there.
So let me remind people to stay tuned. I mentioned earlier, Labor Radio here on KBOO on Mondays at 6 p.m. And in addition, begin to ask critical questions and ask the question, I know things were not necessarily better a few decades ago, but since 1970, wages have not risen.
They've stagnated.
Stagnated. And and just, there's also, is there a relationship between that and the fact that union membership have declined?
Well, look at it this way. It's a matter of propaganda. What people are being told and what they choose to believe. You're also being told that if you get a higher minimum wage, it's going to be fewer jobs in the future for millennials. So that may not be true. That could be the line we're being assaulted with. So do your research, find out, organize, share information, and fight back. Like the powers that be.
Like the fowls that be. Thank you so much for listening this morning. I'm Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey. Stay tuned to KBOO Portland, your community connection.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Stand By Your Land, a community forum on keeping public lands in public hands, on July 19th at 6:30 p.m. at Keene Garage in Portland. Stand By Your Land will feature detailed presentations from Oregon Wild, the Audubon Society of Portland, the Oregon National Desert Association, and BARC on the many values of public lands, the current proposals to take them away, and how to successfully fight against this attack. Again, that's Stand By Your Land, a community forum on keeping public lands in public hands, on July 19th at 6:30 p.m. at Keene Garage, 505 Northwest 13th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is always looking for ways people can work with us and support us. KBOO has a wish list, and we'd love help getting some of those items donated. Some things on our list include a color printer, digital recorders, a pop-up canopy, dishwashing detergent, brooms and mops, or services like roofing, plumbing, and electrical work. Please contact station co-manager Delphine at del@kboo.org or go to kboo.fm/kboo's wishlist for more information about supporting your favorite community radio station, KBOO Portland. KBOO Portland.
I wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. If there's a mole in the ground, then I'd root the mountains down. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's Johnnie's sunglasses. Oh, I wish there's Johnnie's sunglasses. If he's not his sunglasses, then I'd show you messages I did.